Good day, and welcome to the TGS Q1 2014 results conference call. Today's conference is being recorded, and at this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Robert Hobbs. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, and welcome to TGS's first quarter 2014 conference call. My name is Robert Hobbs. I'm CEO of TGS, and joining me today on the call is Kristian Johansen, our CFO. Earlier today, we posted our first quarter earnings release and a presentation of the results on our website. I hope you've had an opportunity to view that release, and we'll now give just a brief summary of the main points before opening your calls to your questions. In the first quarter of 2014, TGS had total net revenues of $222 million, an increase of 5% compared to the $211 million in the same period one year ago. We achieved record late sales for the first quarter period of $137 million, up 9% from the first quarter of 2013. Net pre-funding revenues were $74 million. Those were up 33% from the same period a year ago, funding 57% of the company's operational multi-client investments during the quarter. Our multi-client investment totaled $129 million. That's 3% higher than one year ago. Proprietary revenues of $11 million were lower than the $29 million from one year ago, as we have not performed any proprietary acquisition projects in 2014. Our resulting operating profit was $94 million, 5% higher than one year ago, representing 42% of net revenues. We delivered cash flow from operations of $223 million, up 25% from $179 million in Q1 2013. Due to the strong cash flow, our cash position increased from $281 million to $366 million during the first quarter. Earnings per share were $0.61 per share compared to $0.58 per share in Q1 2013. TGS was operationally active in many regions of the world during the first quarter, including Brazil, the Gulf of Mexico, North America onshore, Australia, Benin, Madagascar, and the Barents Sea. The first quarter of 2014 was marked by high investments in projects carrying significant pre-funding in areas such as Australia and onshore North America. Some of these projects are either completed or will be completed during the second quarter, meaning that investments in pre-funding are expected to be somewhat lower for this quarter, in line with our guidance for the full year. Our backlog continues to be strong, and at the end of Q1, we had future customer commitments of $213 million, which is 45% higher than one year ago. TGS has secured a significant amount of necessary vessel capacity to execute on its investment plan in 2014. At this time, the company expects adequate available additional vessel capacity in the market to execute on our investment plans for the year. Finally, we confirm that our full-year guidance remains unchanged, with multi-client library investments of $390 million-$460 million, average pre-funding in the range of 45%-55% of investments, an average annualized multi-client amortization rate in the range of 40%-46% of net revenues, and net revenues in the range of $870 million-$950 million, of which approximately 5% will be from proprietary contract projects. At this time, we'll open the call for your questions. Roman, I'll turn it over to you at this point.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question at this time, please press the star asterisk key followed by the digit one on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. We will now take our first question from Mr. John Olaisen from ABG. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Houston. A couple of questions. First, on the multi-client sales, we see it from one of your charts that 23% of Q1 multi-client revenues came from vintages that were older than 2010, and that's an exceptionally high number of sales from fully written down data. Could you tell us a little bit more about where geographically those revenues came from, please?
Yeah, I mean, we don't disclose that information typically, John, but that percentage of sales on a quarterly basis that falls within vintages of projects that are fully written down varies quite a bit on a quarter-by-quarter basis, and it's been as high as 20%, I guess, back in 2010. 28% back in 2010, I've seen it as low as 5 to 6%. So it varies quite a bit. It's difficult to predict because it's notoriously difficult to predict exactly what data sets oil companies are going to license on a quarter by quarter basis, and it has to do with the sales mix. You go back and probably do your own estimations probably by just going back and looking at our vintages of data sets. You know, our performance for the quarter was pretty broad globally. We had a number of triggers during the quarter. So you could probably go back and just estimate, you know, based upon where our investments were pre-2010 and where some of those might have been, you know, paired up with some of the triggers during the quarter.
And if I do that, I would assume that most of those sales were Gulf of Mexico. And looking at the licensing around the Central Gulf of Mexico license around in March, we saw there were a lot of newcomers to the Gulf of Mexico in the licensing round. I would suspect that this is the effect we see in your Q1 numbers. But you don't have to answer that, but is it possible to give some indication of whether this is a change, or we'll see more of this in the next couple of quarters, stronger sales from older vintages?
Well, I think your assumption is probably a good one. speaking directly to the Gulf of Mexico, I know we've been very impressed with the customer mix in the Gulf of Mexico. There's a number of private equity backed oil companies that have been kicked off over the past couple of years, and they're very aggressive, very active. They need data. We love to see that kind of thing happen. I don't really see that changing. We see evidence that there are, you know, management teams that are still forming out there, going out and looking for private equity money to start deepwater teams. And I think Deepwater Gulf of Mexico has, in contrast to our fears after Macondo that it would be a super major playground only. I think it's been pleasing to see the customer mix trend towards the smaller startups over the past couple of years. We also had the Norwegian 23rd round kickoff during the quarter as well, and you saw in our revenue distribution that Christian presented in the talk that our sales were fairly strong in Europe. So it was a pretty broad mix of data sets, and just kind of addressing, you know, whether we see that continuing in the future. I say yeah. I mean, I don't see with our strong investments in 2008 through 2010, we've got a great high quality data set in those vintages that is quite attractive to our customer base.
And if you look a little bit longer out in the future, new geographical areas, Mexico seemed to be one potential big area for you, and the letter of intent with Seabird could be up to $100 million invested. Could you tell us a little bit more about when we are likely to see the startup of those surveys? What are the bottlenecks? What's it hanging on? A little bit more details on that project, please.
Sure. Yeah, sure. I can't really give you a solid date about when we expect seismic permits to be granted. The Mexican government is still working on the legal framework by which they will grant those permits, and as well as the legal framework about exactly how future license rounds are going to be held. We're sort of in the middle of what they call round zero, which is they're currently assessing the acreage that Pemex has requested to be maintained at Pemex. And in September, those decisions will be released. And I suspect things will happen fairly rapidly after September, after that point.
After September, right.
Yeah, because during this period in which they're evaluating those acreage requests, they're also working on developing a legal framework by which future rounds will be held. So, you know, what's striking about Mexico is just the enormous area that is relatively data poor. You know, we're talking 600,000 square kilometers of Gulf of Mexico that is as similar to in size to the U.S. Gulf of Mexico and similar in geologic diversity. And so, you know, we've seen what's happened in the Gulf of Mexico, and now there's an opportunity to move into a new area that's relatively data poor. You know, I can tell you that there's quite a bit of interest from our customer base in Mexico, you know, we think it's going to be a real growth opportunity for us going forward. So we were pleased to announce the frame agreement that we have with Seabird. It secures vessel capacity that we'll utilize as we build the library down there, and we think it'll be a very interesting market for us going forward.
Do you think there's any possibility of a startup of your survey in 2014?
It's tough to tell right now, John. I can't really make that call. I think if it is 2014, it'll certainly be the latter part of 2014, I would think. But it's just too early to make a call on that right now.
Is it also competition from the seismic guys to be first mover in, to grab area, so to speak?
Well, I imagine you could probably assume with a market like this, you could probably assume that, I don't have firsthand knowledge, obviously, but you could probably assume that other players in the seismic industry are also looking at Mexico as a growth opportunity.
My final question is on Q2. You write in your report that multi-client investments and pre-funding are likely to be somewhat lower in Q2. Is it possible to be a little bit more specific? How much more in terms of investments, for instance?
What I can point to is our vessel capacity slide in the outlook section of our presentation, and you can go through that, and both from vessel capacity and from an onshore crew standpoint. You know, right now we've only secured one crew in Q2 for the onshore North American Rush Creek in Texas. And you can see a number of projects that are sort of ramping off in the latter part of Q1 and in Q2 from the marine standpoint. I would point out that in Australia, the project that we've been working on in the Great Australian Bight is a project that is characterized by quite high pre-funding, and we will be wrapping that up in June. So we won't have a full quarter of that project, and then of course we've wrapped up our Brazil JV with in the Campos Basin, and we've also wrapped up our other Australian project. This is all, of course, in line with our plan. It's all in line with our guidance, and you know, as you know, John, you've following us for a long time. You know, our investment's vary quarter by quarter just based upon our activity.
So we should assume that if we announce any new projects now, they will not be from Q2, so we just use the investment schedule for Q2 to try to estimate the investments for Q2.
I wouldn't totally rule out maybe new projects being announced, but you know, we're already into mid-April, so we're almost kind of late April, so we're almost a third of the way through Q2.
Excellent. That was all for me. Thanks, and congrats with a great quarter again. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Christopher Muller-Lockin from SB1 Markets. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Late sales were much stronger than I had expected. And would you highlight any specific sales or regions causing the strong performance in second quarter?
It was pretty broad, Christopher. You know, I think, you know, in answering the previous questions in the call today, I think we've sort of highlighted some triggers. Of course, we had the Gulf of Mexico Central round that occurred in March. Just in commenting on that, on the outcome of that round, while the number of customers that participated in that round declined year on year, we were quite pleased to see where the bidding activity was in relation to our data. In fact, you know, the high bid block was in the core area of our full ASMA survey, Patriot. So, I think in relation to where the activity in that trigger point for that round was, it was focused on TGS's dominant area of the Gulf of Mexico. So, but again, we had the 23rd round kicking off in the quarter in Norway, and of course we still have impact from the OMV operated Wisting well up in the Hoop area in the North Central Barents Sea, and that's created a lot of interest in our core data sets. So I think it was pretty. It's tough to kind of put a finger on it, and we typically don't talk about individual projects where the strength is, but it was pretty broad brush in the quarter, I would say.
And you touched upon this previously with John as well, but of course with sales from fully written down service being as high as it was, is it fair to assume that, you know, given the operating margin being as high as it was in NSA and Europe, that it was primarily Gulf of Mexico and North Sea data which drove that fully written down sales?
Yeah, I think that's probably a pretty good assumption. I also should mention that in the UK we England has been holding around during Q1. It's their 28th round in the North Sea, and we have a growing 3D database as well as a long-standing regional 2D database, probably the most complete 2D database for the North Sea. So that was also an area of interest in the quarter.
Yep. Looking on the vessel schedule. You mentioned a P-cable survey in Northwest Europe using Bergen Surveyor. And it's mentioned as a 3D project. So could you elaborate a bit more? Because I know Bergen as an old 2D vessel. But is it another vessel, or is it just a small 3D?
No, it's the same one. It's an interesting operation, and it has to do with the geology that companies are really looking at in the Hoop Complex area, around the North Central Barents Sea. That geology is the reservoir there is in the Jurassic section, which is quite shallow. And so, what's important is really increasing frequency of your database. So the Bergen Surveyor is towing, and I forget the number, 10 to 12. Very short streamers behind it, so it's a. You're correct. It's a 2D, historically a 2D vessel, but the acquisition configuration is very similar to a 3D data, a 3D operation, but with very, very, very short cables on the back. And so what you're recording is the near offsets at very high frequency.
And of course, we're
acquiring this data in sort of a swath fashion over. Over many of the more attractive prospects in the area.
Okay, but just in terms of making the assumptions for the second quarter multi-client investments, would this be similar to a 2D operation daily cost, or would it be a 3D operation cost?
Kind of in between.
In between.
Yeah, a bit more than 2D because of the technology that we're towing behind it.
Okay. Two short questions finally as well. The Australia project in the Great Australian Bight seems to be 1 month longer than previously assumed. Is it anything specific, or is it just acquisition taking slightly longer than assumed?
Yeah, it has to do with the customer's desire to extend the program as far as we can into the acquisition season. So the survey itself is expected to be about 8,300 square kilometers, and really what the customer is wanting us to do, it's no secret that this is over an already operated block. There's an operator that already holds this block. And I think you can assume that that operator wants us to acquire as much data as we can during the acquisition season, during the summer season in Australia. And so we're going to take it. We believe we could take it as far as mid-June.
And finally, it seems like the startup for Nyla has been pushed out a bit from earlier. Is it... a request of you, or is it Polak is asking for a later startup?
Probably a little bit of both. It's just coordination with Polarcus and the timing of our project worked well with taking delivery in mid-June instead of the earlier communicated date. So it's probably certainly coordination between both us and Polarcus in terms of determining what that date is.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Christian Deason from Pareto Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi there. Just a question, sort of more broadly speaking, on the current market environment and looking at your opportunity set now for the rest of the year. How has the development been over the past few months with regards to obtaining pre-funding and client interest in general?
Well, I think it's the plan. We're happy with the way our summer season has developed in terms of our plans in Q2, Q3. You can see that. You would expect that we would have projects to fill out our guided investment. We would be announcing additional projects in the second half of the year. Excuse me. And those conversations continue with our customer base and I would characterize the market as being similar to what we were communicating earlier in the year when we communicated our guidance. It's a market that is a bit uncertain at this point. Companies are taking probably a little bit more time before they make their pre-funding decisions on new projects than maybe they did a year ago. But I think, in establishing our guidance for 2014, we entered into the year knowing that, right? So we took a bit of a cautious approach, and it's continuing to play out as we had expected.
All right. And in Australia, with regards to the call it final or the rest of that program for Chevron, is that or when will we have a decision? When do you expect a decision with regards to that next phase?
I don't know. I probably shouldn't comment on that. That would be something that the operator would discuss. We believe that, I would expect that they would start communicating their plans, within the next month, so that whatever company, gets the work in the second phase that's planned for that work, would be able to prepare for that. It's long, there's somewhat long lead times in terms of permitting in Australia. So I would expect that the operator in that area, if they have future seismic plans that they wish to execute this year, they're going to want to get whatever player is successful to get that work. They're going to want to get that contractor started pretty quick in preparation. So I would expect within, my guess, within the next month or so. But that would be something that you should ask the operator, I would guess.
And if you don't get that phase, is it then right to assume that the Duchess option will not be called?
Not necessarily. I mean, there are other opportunities we're looking at in the Asia Pacific region. So that option wouldn't necessarily just be dedicated to that particular project in that block.
Okay, and just finally on the 23rd round. In Norway, given the timing or uncertainty surrounding the timing, sort of now expected second half 15, how would you expect that to impact the sales pattern going forward?
Yeah, I think sales of our library there on the blocks that will be confirmed for the round. I think sales will likely be probably drawn out, probably longer than it would be if you had a sort of a normal schedule on the Norwegian license round. I suppose that you know, so I guess what I'm saying is that I expect sales timing to probably, you know, I can confirm that we think it'll be extended. And you can look at that a couple of ways. That could be a good thing because it gives companies more time to consider their data licensing decisions and gives them longer time to work data. For example, they may work 2D first and then make a decision to license 3D in focus areas, and that's a good thing for our library there because we have a very complete library from the standpoint of both data types within the areas of interest that are included in the round. But you also might expect that you won't see sort of a spiky sales nature that you would when in a normal round where, you know, if things were normal this year, you would expect bids in the fall to be turned into the Norwegian government, and so you would expect to see a lot of sales in sort of latter part of Q2, Q3 in a normal year. And so I think that those will probably be extended out a bit. You probably won't see as spiky of a pattern as you might in other years.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Again, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question today, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We will now take our next question from Rob Pullin from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Quite a lot of questions have been asked and answered already, so just one from me. In terms of Mexico, and I know that's a big focus, but do you expect the demand from oil companies for data in Mexico to be incremental to the global outlook, or do you think it to be more of a substitute effect, i.e. The IOCs might favor buying data in Mexico versus buying data in the North Sea or the U.S. side of the Gulf or Angola or wherever it might be? Thanks very much.
Yeah, sure, Rob. I think that... you know, I wouldn't expect that you would see necessarily a big shift in oil companies. You know, in other words, I don't think that you would expect them to give up one play to be focusing on a new play like Mexico. I think they will typically not work that way. At least certainly the super majors don't work that way. You know, they will allocate personnel to look at a new play, but they typically don't. At least from the G&G perspective and preparation for exploration license rounds and things like that, they won't sort of set aside a particular region to focus on a new region that might be opening up. So I think from that standpoint, I think it's, you can regard it as from their standpoint is sort of incremental, you know, in terms of add-on activity for them as a new play opens up.
Very clear. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Morten Nystrøm from Nordea. Please go ahead.
Yes. Good morning to you guys. First, congratulations of a very strong quarter. My questions have mainly been answered, but it's just a question, maybe this is for Christian, I don't know. It's regarding your buyback program. You just bought back shares worth, you know, a couple of the dollars. You have authorized $30 million. What is the strategy here? What should we think about this? Is it? Are you supposed to just be in the market buying a couple of dollars now and then, or is it? Do you have any strategy? Thanks.
No, I guess you're right. We purchased TGS shares worth $3.4 million in the quarter. We still have an additional $26.6 million to buy for the remaining three quarters of the year, and I think if there's any strategy I would say something about, it would probably be that we're opportunistic. If we see, and you've probably seen through history that the share price of TGS is far more volatile than the underlying earnings, and if we see examples of a share price that is dropping significantly more than, for example, what the underlying earnings should indicate, then obviously we would take advantage of that and be more aggressive on buying back shares. I think that's probably the best answer I can give you.
Okay. But your ambition is to use the $30, right?
That's the ambition, absolutely.
Okay. And for you, Robert, was first quarter stronger than you expected? That's my first question. My second question is, how is the competitive landscape now? What is happening there? we're starting to see some signals in Vestangeco. They're moving the vessels out in a separate company, bringing the multi-client division in. Some people talking about them going out and also, you know, possibly renting in vessels. Could you elaborate? Is it any change? You also see that, you know, Polarcus and Dolphin, I would say, relatively poor performance in their multi-client for 2013. They're at least saying they will be more prudent in 2014. Could you elaborate?
Yeah, I think the first part of your question, I think Q1 really kind of played out in accordance with our expectations. So, you know, it was, we were, yeah, I mean, I think it was something, you know, the results from Q1 were something that we had anticipated early in the quarter and early in the year when we issued our guidance. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't something that we were necessarily surprised about, I suppose. In regards to sort of competition in the marketplace, you know, when we do run across competitors, it tends to be those bigger vessel owners, and in the marketplace, we will see examples sometimes of projects, and this has been a trend, I guess, over the past year since early 2013. We've seen some projects being executed on by some of the competition that really didn't meet the financial criteria that we would have chosen, and you saw that in our 2013 behavior. We pulled back on our investments than what we had originally guided in the year because we felt like it was important to focus on quality, and we're going to continue that focus. You know, we don't, you know, as you know, Morton, we don't worry about keeping a boat utilized. We worry about reaching a good return on our investors' money in geoscience projects. So if we can't get that quality, then we can be flexible with our investments. I don't really want to comment on what the motivation might be from competition in regards to things they might do in terms of how they organize their company. That's really not my place to do. But you know, it's something we watch, and we know several of these competitors because they're close partners of ours in many regions of the world. So, you know, I think there's not a lot I can say about that. We know them well. We're in frequent contact with them on our partnership projects. And I think if you're running a marine seismic company or even a land seismic company, it's probably pretty smart to have a multi-client department because certainly those guys, you know, it's tough to build constant backlog in the contract market. So, but I think you just need to keep in mind that TGS is truly unique because we don't have the motivation of asset utilization, keeping assets utilized. We have the motivation of earning a good return on our investments, and that's really the difference.
Okay, and my final question to Robert is that as you mentioned, you know, you have superior returns, well above your peers. Nothing to discuss. My concern with the stock is basically the growth there. You have had declining investments since 2012, and you know, could you elaborate or could you convince us that, you know, how do you see TGS growing their business from current levels, especially in mind what's happening, you know, in the overall you know, E&P spending space?
Yeah, you know, I think if you look at 2012, Morton, you'll recognize that was a pretty extraordinary year. And, you know, if you look at sort of the period of, you know, 2009 to 2000, you know, through 2013, you know, we've had some, you know, very steady investment growth and revenue growth as well during that period. You know, I think, you know, and 2012 was just a remarkable year, and, you know, we could never... You know, on the revenue side, we grew 53% between 2011 and 2012, and so I think most people would expect that we couldn't do that every year going forward. But I think if you look at the long-term trends, we've been growing our investments quite nicely. That growth has been has been built on a foundation of identifying new plays around the world, and we continue to do that. You know, I think what's striking, if you look at our investment both in 2D as well as 3D, you'll recognize that there continues to be a strong role for 2D data around the world, and that's because there are frontier basins still around the world that are extremely data poor, and we've proven ourselves with our approach of doing the proper geoscience at TGS. We've proven our approach of being able to grow in those areas with some very smart investments, and then following up on those 2D campaigns with 3D campaigns, and then you look at the mature areas like the Gulf of Mexico and Northwest Europe. We've proven the ability to continue to employ the latest technologies, both on the acquisition side as well as the processing side, to continue to improve our data position in those mature basins. And I mean, heck, you know, you look at a lot of these frontier basins, and some of these frontier basins look like the Gulf of Mexico back in the 60s and 70s in terms of their data maturity. And so it gets you excited about additional investment opportunities and applying new technologies in these areas. So, you know, that's where we're going to find our growth. And I think that growth is it's quite promising. Gets me excited.
Okay. Final question. I think you have like roughly a market share now of 22-23% or something. Do you expect this to be relatively constant over the next couple of years, or do you expect it to grow further?
It's our ambition, of course, to grow it further. I think we see evidence of the continued acceptance of the multi-client business model by our customer base. I think they've become very comfortable in accessing their seismic information and geologic information through the multi-client model. It's our ambition to be the strongest multi-client player in the industry and be able to leverage both that continued that growth and acceptance of multi-client data, as well as our ability to sort of sniff out the new basins around the world and the application of these new technologies to be able to grow that market share. So that's certainly our ambition.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Morten.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Shola Labino from TVH. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I just had one question on, I guess, market dynamics. So, you mentioned in your release that you've seen additional vessel capacity in the market, and I think what I've heard the other vessel operators say is, they're also alluding to the fact that they're going to take out spare vessels from the market. So I was just wondering if that is feeding back into the multi-client business, in that are these companies now forced to dedicate more vessels to multi-client, thereby taking on more projects that maybe you could have taken on at lower pre-funding levels and forcing you to walk away from those sort of projects?
Yeah, I can't address each individual company and what their motivations are, but I think certainly we've seen a period of supply-demand imbalance in the geophysical industry. I think that imbalance, at least from a few of the players, has probably contributed to their increased multi-client investments to fill holes in contract backlog. And as I referenced before earlier in the call today, we see some projects being executed that are being done with under financial terms that aren't acceptable to us. So I think we've been through a few quarters here of really severe supply-demand imbalance. Some of the announcements that you've seen with vessels, 3D vessels that are being taken out of 3D work, most of these are being utilized as source vessels on wide azimuth crews, dedicated source vessels. So it's not as if these 3D vessels have been, shelved or turned into scrap or aren't part of the seismic industry. They're still being utilized in collecting seismic data. It's tough to tell going forward what will happen. I think what we get concerned about is just making sure that there are adequate vessels available to be able to execute on our investment plans, and we can clearly say that is the case now. When we have a project, it's not a problem for us to get multiple proposals for those projects to be able to execute on those. And I don't really see that changing sort of near or medium term, actually.
Right. And just to follow on to that, at what point would you become worried by effectively the oversupply if your opportunities for multi-client debt diminish because your peers are being aggressive about things?
Well, keep in mind that we're one of the larger consumers of seismic services in the world. last year we invested $439 million in seismic services. That's more than most major oil companies. So we're a big customer of the industry. In my career, I've not seen a case to where people aren't happy seeing TGS walk in and ask for quotes for vessels. I would say that there have been periods. I guess the last period that we went through where vessel capacity was tight was 2006-2007 period, early 2008. And the way TGS responds to those tight periods is we tend to lock in vessel capacity by taking on longer-term charters. So whereas now we're chartering vessels on a project-by-project basis, we can oftentimes deal with tighter periods by taking on charters that would span multiple projects around the world. Of course, that's less advantageous to us because we have to move those vessels between those projects around the world. So we prefer not to do that. But if you look at the way we responded back in the 2006-2007 period, we took on 12 to 18 month, I think of a 24 month charter that we took on a 2D vessel. So that's the way we respond to be able to lock in capacity that we need. We would respond similarly if the market went into a tighter period now.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one. As we have no further questions, I'd like to turn the call back to the speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
Yeah, thanks, Roman. Appreciate everybody calling in today. Thank you for your time and questions, and look forward to presenting our Q2 results in late July going forward. So thank you very much.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.